Hey, this is Adam Mastriani, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
I am the one, the only, Steve Megatron, and this is the oligopolized version of Altered Geek.
This is how you remind me.
Hi, this is Adam Mastriani, and you are listening to Altered Geek.
That's right, I am TF2 and Mike, and I am the Altered Geek tonight. Joining me is that studier of people, Mr. Oligopoly Avenger himself, Adam... Shit, I forgot how to ask you how to pronounce it. Is it Mastriani?
I say Mastriani, but there's a real jumble of vowels in there. I don't hold it against anybody. Like, an O is fine, O-I, that's okay. But when you get to O-I-A, I mean, really, it's anything goes. So, yeah.
Well, I was thinking like maestro, so Mastriani, or I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, you are here, sir.
Thank you for having me. Glad to
absolutely. Glad to be here. This is going to be a blast. And I have actually read all of Adam's writings on his Substack that are available to the free people that don't pay for Substacks.
Mm-hmm.
But we are focusing on three of your articles tonight, continuing on with our conversation that Steve and I did in our pop culture oligopoly episode of this show that we focused on your article about that. And so before we get into all of that, explain how you study people online in real life. Like how is, cause that's part of your thing. You're like your name. And then I study people and I'm like, how is he studying people?
Yeah. It's a good question. So I'm trained as a social psychologist. I have a PhD in social psychology. And what I do is a mix of things. So I see my job as putting people in situations and then measuring what they do. And so like my kind of psychology, like I don't treat patients. I can't prescribe pills. All I can really do is ask people questions and record their answers. So like one of the research projects that I've done was just all about conversations and whether conversations end when people want them to. And like kind of a very basic question about social interaction that had just never been answered. And the way I studied that was I brought a bunch of people into the lab, had them talk as long as they wanted to. And afterward, they fill out a questionnaire that just asks them, was there any point at which you felt ready for that conversation to end? If so, when was it? Like try to estimate to the nearest minute. If not, how much longer do you want to go? Like estimate that to the nearest minute. And then guess the same thing for the other person. When do you think they wanted to leave at some point? If so, when? If not, how much longer do they want to go? And just with those questions, I can look at like, well, first of all, do people say there is a point at which they wanted to leave? And how far is that point from the point that they actually did leave? And what we found was, to us, surprising, which is that almost never do people say that the conversation ended pretty much when they wanted it to end. And it's not only that people say that they wanted to go sooner, about 30% of people say they wanted to continue, and that this happens for two reasons. One is that people very rarely want to speak for the same amount of time as somebody else. So it's really hard for us to both get what we want if we want different things. And the other problem is people really don't know when the other person wants to leave. So when people estimated when the other person wanted to leave, they were off by 60% of the length of their conversation. So if we talked for just 10 minutes, and I guess when you wanted to leave, I'd be off by 6 minutes.
Wow.
And we have a bunch of other findings. And so in that project as well, so other than just bringing people into the lab, we also surveyed people online about the last conversation that they had. So in the lab, people are talking to people that they haven't met before. And obviously those conversations could be different than the majority of conversations people have, which is with people that they know really well and talk to all the time. And so we also did this study where we surveyed people about the last conversation that they had, overwhelmingly with people that they know really well, talk to all the time and like a lot. And just ask them like, okay, think back to that last conversation. Was there a point at which you wanted it to end? If so, when was it? All the same questions. And we found the same thing. So this isn't just a matter of like, oh, conversations between strangers are really fraud and nobody gets what they want. The same thing that happened in our laboratory is happening in people's living rooms. So hopefully that gives kind of an example of what it means to me to study people.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you've found that conversations, you could set up a conversation anywhere. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter if it's in real life or online, on Twitter, you can't really do conversations on Instagram, but Facebook, whatever,
yeah.
And next thing you know, you're recording podcasts with that person for 14 yeah. years or so, kind of thing. And it just depends. Like, same thing with basically, everything you just said, you could turn that into a giant podcast show because mm-hmm. depending on when the conversation stops is depending on when either the episode moves on or it ends or, like, this has a clear-cut ending at some point, this interview will, because it's more of like when I am out of things that we're discussing, I'll say, okay, well, we're going to go to an ad break. You'll hear some ads and some other stuff. We'll come back to close the show after this. Of course, I'll say that yep. like 40 minutes from now or whatever it is, and then I'll go through the closing, and then the show will end. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of these conversations people may have, like, insert message service here, whether it's SMS, whether it's Facebook Messenger, whether it's Twitter DM, like, there's a clear-cut conversation stop mm-hmm. in some of the private message, like, okay, I'll talk to you later, or okay, that's it, or oh, sorry, I didn't see this message from 2 days ago, let me reply to you now, kind mm-hmm. of thing, and it's so weird, and it's, you can have a conversation with almost anybody on almost any topic. And mm-hmm. as long, I've always said this, I will podcast with anybody as long as we have some sort of similar thing. In like, I'm not going to be on a Game of Thrones podcast because I've only ever seen the first episode of the first season. So that's mm-hmm. like, you know what I mean? Like, you find those like-minded people and those people that have your interests as well. But at the same time, I also do this other thing called Origins now. I've been doing it on our comic show for almost 10 years now, but a couple of years ago I expanded it into from comics to toys to Transformers to He-Man to cartoons to whatever, where I have a set series of questions that I'll ask people, and it's basically an interview style, kind of like how this is going to be. Mm-hmm. And, we just have a fun old time.
Yeah.
Your pop culture... It's so hard to say it this way. Your oligopolization article, the very first.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. I mean, I'll obviously have the link in the show notes so anybody wants to read Adam's article, which you should go read this article. Like, we did a whole podcast on this thing, and like, wow.
Yeah, I wish there was a less silly name for it, but the dictionary gives what it gives. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in that Altered Geek episode, I used ization, I used oligopolizing, mm-hmm. I've been oligopolied, mm-hmm. it's like you can, God, but the whole premise behind that is like just crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just... Like, is pop culture and even to a higher extent, geek/nerd culture, is it de-evolving? Hmm. Are we not, like, because what I find is we seem to, like, I get it. Companies, insert company here, has to hold on to this IP here, whatever. I get it. But, like... There's nothing like anything new is like, oh, well, we're not going to give that a chance. Like I mentioned earlier, like, and I get it. This is more of a TV thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think I mentioned this to you off air. I don't know if I mentioned it on air. There was a Fox TV series called APB
mm-hmm.
back in 2016, 2017. And it was about this tech billionaire who takes over a police district in Chicago. Lasted one season, 13 episodes. And apparently it didn't do well enough. And, of course, it's one of those shows that ends on a come back next season to see what, it ends on that cliffhanger. It's like, oh, God. But I like that show to the point of it's like, oh, man, this was like, look, police dramas haven't been new since like the first time police dramas were new, let's say the 40s or 50s or, you know, Dragnet, Chips, what, and I know technically Chips is a comedy, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, but you know, police procedurals are not new now. We have 20 plus years of the Law and Order franchise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this one was cool because you had, first of all, they had cool cop cars, you know, Cadillacs as cool cop cars. That's awesome. You know, second of all, you have this, you know, Tony Stark genius like billionaire coming in and because his friend got murdered, you know, he wants to, you know, have justice, and 911 put him on hold and whatever else. But it's like, that was something new that I liked and I wanted more of it. But yet here we are on the upteenth return or upteenth either upteenth return of Family Guy because it just can't stay canceled, or the, you know, 32nd, 33rd season of The Simpsons. Don't get me wrong. I like The Simpsons. It's great. For the most part. I mean, most people will say it kind of sucks past season 5, but that is what, you know, that's whatever. But it's like, my whole point in going off on all this is like, they want to tie us to franchises, and it seems like nothing new is catching on. So that's what I mean about the de-evolution of the culture.
Yeah, I think that's one way of looking at it. And I mean, you know more about this than me, but another way of looking at it is like, you know, when I was growing up, I was born in 91. So when I was growing up in like late 90s, early 2000s, when I wanted to play a video game, like I would go to the mall and like whatever was at GameStop or back then Electronics Boutique was what I could play. You know, so like the 60 or whatever N64 games that were on the wall, like those were the options. And there are plenty of good options, but I mean, now if I was growing up, it's like, well, you could boot up Steam and there are thousands of options. Like there are so many different games that you could play, and some of them are really good. And some of them don't have to actually get all that popular in order for there to be a sequel, or at least for the creator to support themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a positive version of this too, where like we have more options than ever. But what is happening at the top of the charts is like that is calcifying, and like new stuff doesn't break through to the mainstream as much anymore as it did, even though outside of the mainstream, there is this wealth that we have now that we didn't have before. And so part of the way this cashes out is like, yeah, if there's, you know, if you're a person who really loves something that like doesn't get very popular, you're just out of luck. Like you don't get the second season of APB. On the other hand, you might get something in the first place that you never would have gotten before. The like whatever those games are that wouldn't have been on the wall at GameStop, like you now get to play them. So there's an element of this that I do think is unfortunate, and an element of it that I think it is almost because I think there are more options that we get this oligopolization at the top. So I think it's sort of two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, because at this point we are. And we have been for years now, riddled with choice. Ever since, insert whatever here, whatever came first, I don't care, I'm not looking it up, but let's say since 2005, from 2005 to 2022, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Tubi, Peacock TV, Pluto TV, HBO Max, Warner Discovery, whatever the hell that's going to turn into, Discovery Play. You know, we have all this choice, and it's the same thing. We sit like I was born in 80, so I'm 11 years older than you, or whatever it is, you know. But like, you know, like you're saying about, you know, the stuff with GameStop. Yeah, I remember playing Spyro and Crash in a GameStop or an EB Games or whatever. Hell, I remember before any of those stores were in the mall, they had – and yes, I know I'm an old man, folks. Get off my lawn. Damn kids with your hipping and your hopping. Blow up your damn parents, you morons. I remember in the mall, in the center of the mall, right next to the, you know, earrings and other boutique thing that would be in the center, the Nintendo the Center was a yeah. But in the center of what you know, whatever area that is, just, you know, in its own kiosk was mm-hmm. the Nintendo Center. And they had, because at the time in 92. Yeah, that sounds about right. 92. They had these things called the Nintendo Center, and they had Super Nintendos hooked up, but the screens and the controllers, like the consoles, were on the inside where the employees would be, and the screens and the consoles were facing out. The screens and the controllers were facing out, so you could stand there and play, and everybody would stand around. It's just like an arcade, except it's a TV and a Super Nintendo controller. You'd spend hours in, because they would only, and I would love to find the history of this if there mm-hmm. was ever just a, and I don't think there is, but it seems to me every time I was playing that, I was only on Donut Plains 1. That's the level that was playing all the time. And I don't know if that was a special cartridge or whatever, but it's the same thing. Like you were saying with GameStop, you know, you go in, you could play whatever games yeah. on whatever con, you know, and it's just that evolution of, again, more choice, more,
yeah.
there's too much stuff.
Yeah. And I think it's a blessing and a curse, right? Because when there's so much more to choose from, it's much more likely that you're going to find the thing that's exactly in the niche that you want. On the other hand, it becomes impossible to pick anything. And I think there's some evidence from psychology. I think it's fairly complicated, but as to like when exactly this happens. But we do know it is possible that when you're offered more choices, you end up less satisfied with the thing that you choose, because you always think about like, well, I could have chosen better because there were so many other possibilities. What if I chose the wrong one? Choosing itself was harder, so you had to think about all the reasons why this wasn't the right choice. Like I'm picking, you know, one thing out of 50 possible options. And so I have to think about the pros and cons of all of them, which means that whatever I pick, I'm going to know all the cons. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a good example of this is whenever if you're with two other people and trying to figure out what to watch on Netflix, or even mm-hmm. just alone trying to figure out what to watch on Netflix. Like, it's so hard to go through all those options. And one way out of this is like, well, I kind of know what I like already, so what else is in that niche? And I'll just keep watching that. And I think that's part of why mm-hmm. we see oligopolization, is because like, well, look, there's so many video games to choose from, but I know Zelda games are good. So like, why don't I just play the next one of that? Because like, I know I'm not going to be wasting my money. Like, it's a AAA title and I like the last one I played. All these other things that like, they could be good, they could be bad, but can I really take a risk? Especially knowing there are really good options out there. Like, why take a risk when I know there's a sure thing that's going to be good, even if it's the same thing that I know already? And I think that's one reason why, like, you now very rarely see new video games in the top 20 bestsellers. Because you have a bunch of people doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, again, the other thing is like they put out a Spider-Man game or a Batman game. And look, the current run of the Marvel Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Miles Morales, those two games, absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing games. Same thing with the Arkham stuff that they did years
ago. Oh, yeah.
City
yeah.
And Asylum and all. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely yeah. great.
Yeah.
But again... We're falling into franchises.
Yeah.
We're falling into characters that have been around for 70, 80, 90 years.
Yeah.
And, like, there is no – I'm going to pull something out of my butt here, but there is no Legacy of Kain. There is no Soul – like, I remember when Legacy of Kain, the first one came out, and then the sequel, Soul Reaver, came out. Like, I was like, oh, this is new. Same thing with Tomb Raider. When mm-hmm. Tomb Raider came out, like, that was huge,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of thing. And obviously with PlayStation having to compete with Nintendo, they create their own mascots and Spyro and Crash, and they yeah. each have their own game series, and some games are good and some games are bad, and you have all this choice. But again, I don't want to say you're locked into it, but they're setting you up to be follow these characters through these games, and like yeah. there's no more new.
Yeah.
And what is new is not like what is new to me is whatever new, even though they probably have some of the same tropes in every film, whatever the new slate of Hallmark Christmas holiday insert, whatever, like, seriously, those Hallmark movies, they run from like hell. They run from like Halloween to Flag Day. Yeah. Like, yeah. I love some of them, but like, you know, come on. And like, seriously, those are the old, like, I think I mentioned this to Steve about not necessarily doing a Hallmark movie podcast, but I had mentioned something about at the time when Karen was still here, I said, oh, you know, let's, you know, have Karen on one of the shows and we can talk about, oh, I need to edit this and put this somewhere. We actually did this. So Karen was always supportive of me podcasting. She was always like, uh-huh, go do it. If you got to, you know, if you got to edit, you whatever. Like, she literally, as you know, she wasn't so far along in her declining health, but when I was editing our top 100 Transformers characters countdown, there were like 3.5 days where I sat here at my computer for 12, 13, 14 hours editing audio because I'm like, I want this to be the best countdown that I can do. And, you know, she supported that and whatever else and everything else. But every time I would want to come up with an idea for her to be on any of our shows, was like, not really. It wasn't like her big thing. And then we see this, and it to me, it's just completely stupid and inane and whatever. I thought it was a full movie. No, it was a short. That stupid Mario Lopez KFC thing that Lifetime, or I don't know. It was, you can look it up. Just look up Mario Lopez KFC, Lifetime, Hallmark, whatever. But it's this like short movie where they're trying to biopic the Colonel's life or something. And we looked at that and we're like, oh yeah, we're going to watch this and we're going to record as we watch it and we're going to have opinions. So I have that audio that I still need to edit together as a fitting tribute to my late.
Wow. It's a recipe for seduction.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. People also ask, is the Mario Lopez KFC movie real? and the answer is yes.
What do you want me to say? Do you want me to talk about this nasty thing I just watched? This waste of 19 minutes I can never reclaim?
Yes, but you have to talk louder. A recipe for love. A
recipe for seduction.
Recipe for seduction. A Lifetime
/ KFC mini movie.
Mini movie, people.
That's what they're calling it.
Mini movie. At first, when I heard about this thing, I thought it was going to be a full-length 1-2-3 hour Hallmark-type movie. My lovely wife, Karen, has just watched this 19-minute catastrophe.
Yes.
What do you think? I have not seen this yet.
I think I need to gouge my eyes out.
Let me tell you, Norm MacDonald and Jim Gaffigan are better colonels in the commercials for KFC than Mario Lopez was. But it's like, what, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 8 minutes? It's like under 10 minutes. It's a short, and I'm thinking it's going to be a full-on Hallmark movie, and then she tells me, no, it's only X. I'm like, seriously, really? People are really excited to see Slater from Saved by the Bell as a young Colonel Sanders. Give me a break.
You got to give the people what they want. And the people want the sexy Colonel. People want the Colonel with full frontal.
Oh, God, no.
And they want to see that fried chicken. And aren't we lucky that we live in the timeline where we got it?
I don't know if lucky is the right term, but yeah.
But I mean, this is part of the upside of too much choice is like, would you have gotten Recipe for Seduction in 1991? I don't know. I don't know if like direct to video maybe, or you got to go to like a dirty video store to like watch the Colonel in a steamy sex scene.
Oh God, I can just
little peep show.
I Oh God, I am that dirty minded that I can actually, like, you know how in some books in old, like, whatever story it is, but they'll say they went to a, you know, porn house or whatever, because they used to be actual, you know, porn film houses and all this and all that, and it's like, oh God, like, I can no.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Really, the thing that gets me about this is I've never seen the Colonel in short sleeves. That really feels like that's what signals to you that this is going to be a sexy movie, because you're going to see the Colonel's arms, and I'm sure a whole lot more.
Yeah, I don't even – I would have to rewatch it, and I eventually am going to re-listen to that audio, but like – the audio of us talking about it, but like that again, that was the first time and only time. I have some other audio bits from, like, so there's a, I think I threw it in there. I got to look at that editing session to see what's in there. But so when we were driving back to Chicago from Louisville at the time in 2017, September, October, I don't know, whatever the hell it was. I don't remember. Somewhere in September of 2017, there's a point in downtown Louisville where the junction of all the highways screws everybody up that hasn't driven it before.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, I was like, go this way, go that way, figure this out. And she's like, get me out of Louisville. And I'm like, can you do that again?
Get me out of Louisville.
So I hit the recorder on my phone and I'm like, here you go. So I have that clip. So I have various clips of her doing stuff, but she never was like super, like, she wasn't like me where I'm like, okay, let's sit down and let's talk about this, and this, and this. And that's okay. That's fine. It is what it is. But she was super supportive of everything. You may or may not know who this is. There is a place in Waukegan, Illinois, and I think they might have moved recently, but I'll have to look into that, called Big Ed's Barbecue.
Okay.
And Big Ed's Barbecue is one of the best things in Illinois when it comes to food, because this dude is just awesome and he's so fun. And I'm like, you know, he will go out of his way to do things for the community, and, you know, he'll do this or he'll do that or whatever. So was it 2018? I think it was, I'd have to look at the website to see when I recorded that episode, 2018, 2019. It was like right before Thanksgiving. And he had posted on social media. He was like, yeah, I'm going to be doing this. And I'm like, dude, how would you like to come over to the house to record a show and talk all about your Thanksgiving? What they were doing was they were doing a Thanksgiving dinner for anyone who needs it kind of thing. Like, come to the restaurant, or if you can't come to the restaurant, we will deliver a specifically prepared, like, mini Thanksgiving meal to you. So, you know, it was like turkey and mashed potatoes and stuffing, and, you know, and it was like kind of like what some of the shelters and some of the soup kitchens and that kind of stuff would do. But this is like a full-on barbecue restaurant kind of thing. And so I was like, you know, can I order some food? Why don't you come over and we can record the show? And I had a great interview with him in person, an amazing conversation. And it was just so fun. And it was just one of those things where she was like, oh, this is awesome. This is great. We get to have one-on-one time, even though she wasn't on the actual recording for the podcast. But, like, you know, he sat there and talked with us, and it was just a fun, fun experience. And it just, I don't know, it just felt like it was a home kind of thing, because initially, and she would never let me do this, and thankfully she didn't, because I'd probably be dead before she would if I ever did this. So Big Ed at Big Ed's Barbecue has a challenge. It's a burger challenge. It's similar to what the other Adam, oh, what's his name? Is it Adam Richman? Man vs. Food.
Okay.
Whatever his name. But, you know, Man vs. Food, he would go in, you know, or these other eating, you know, hot dog eating. So it was like the stack of burger, like, you know, thing with unlimited fries. And it's like, if you can eat this under 10 minutes, it's free and you get your – and my thinking was – I'll never get home if we go to the restaurant. My original thinking was, let's have Big Ed bring the challenge to the house. And she vetoed that. But, you know, it was just fun. And yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, it's things like that that you don't like. I'm not really a barbecue person, but some of the other things that he had on his menu and whatever else were really great. And all that. And yeah. You really, I don't think you can oligopolize barbecue because everybody makes it differently. There's no, you want to talk about a new experience every time, every different restaurant you go to, everybody has a different recipe.
Yeah.
That's the one good thing about food. Food can never be an oligopoly.
Yeah. too many different people making it, too many different preferences. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Mm-hmm. All right. So you followed that up with the oligopolization of everything.
Yeah. When you write a whole post about how there's so many sequels, you got to write a sequel to that post, obviously.
Yep. Yeah.
But I mean, really, this was stuff that like I wanted to put in the first post, but it really felt like. It made more sense to like finish the thought just about popular culture because that's where I had a bunch of data rather than branching out into everything else, even though this is also true in a bunch of other places where you look. A lot of people know about increasing income inequality, and people may know that like big businesses take up a larger share of GDP. But I think there's other stuff in here that people might not be as familiar with. So, important to me, like more scientific paper, fewer scientific papers get more of the citations. So like same thing we see in, you know, movies, TV shows, music, video games, books. We also see it in science. So like fewer of the players own more of the game. A lot of people know about, you know, the collapse of regional news and local newspapers, but the consequence of that is like fewer people reading their local newspaper. People are still reading the news, but now they read the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. So like there too, we get oligopolization. Even the internet, the data that I have here isn't as good, but I think anybody who was, who's been on the internet from the beginning knows that like the internet was really a weird, wild place at the beginning with like all these sites that would appear and disappear. And now, and for the past 10 years, the top sites are the same. It's Google, YouTube, Facebook, and like that is weird historically. Like it didn't used to be that way. Things were moving in and out of the top of the charts much more frequently than they are now.
Because I think that, I mean, not necessarily Google, because okay, Google tried to do this. So like Google is, you know, at its core an ad agency, but with their search engine, with their algorithms, with their all seeing eyes in the sky and everything else and whatever else, you know, they are the, like, who's going to use MSN search or Yahoo search over
Google? Gotta get on that Bing. I'm just constantly binging. Yeah.
No, Bing you in the head. Don't do that. But it's that thing like Google is now the thing. Wikipedia has been and people are often arguable. Oh, Wikipedia, you can't just like if I want to do a podcast about, let's say, what's your favorite cartoon?
Invader Zim.
Okay, that's not exactly what I thought you were going to say, but okay, let's say I go to the Wikipedia article for Invader Zim and I want to do the most generic podcast in the world. Well, I'll just read from Wikipedia. So why are people going to listen to my podcast unless I make it interesting? To give you the information like that I get from that kind of, but like Wikipedia is the place you'll go to get certain information. Whereas like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and now TikTok. Oh God, my head hurts. Look, my head hurts at TikTok. I am too damn old too damn old to deal with TikTok, and I'll tell you why about that in a minute. But like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Instagram needs to stop doing this whole move towards video. I want photos. I want to be able to like a photo, comment on a photo. If you want to do video for stories, fine, whatever. But Facebook is kind of – I've kind of gotten my social media to a point where I notice things, but I only notice the things that I want to notice.
Uh-huh.
I don't pay attention to every single person fighting on Twitter over whether insert character here is better. Like, oh, I'm Team Iron Man. Oh, I'm Team Captain America. You know, like this whole Civil War over. And so, you know, like there's so many art. And yeah, so the whole TikTok thing. In my lifetime, I was born in 1980, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I am old. In my lifetime. The ultimate goal has been to get to a, I don't want to say theater screen, but get to a widescreen television, get to a widescreen monitor, get to a this, get to a that. And we now have that. We have widescreen televisions, widescreen monitors. We have all that now in 2022. And then all of a sudden, TikTok and some of these other things come like, oh, let's do portrait video. I'm like, no. No, don't do that. Stop it.
Uh-huh.
We've spent the last 42 plus years trying to get wide horizontal screens to fill up our lives. Why do we want to then tilt them into portrait mode? Oh, I'm sorry. I did not mean to go down this route. But like, seriously, like I have a 32-inch Samsung M7. It's flat panel, it's widescreen, it's the biggest monitor I have ever had in my entire technology life.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out as a 1991, yeah, I got it in 91. I was 11 years old and I had an Apple II GS. And
oh, yeah.
If anyone remembers the old Apple II monitors, they're not exactly widescreen.
Uh-huh.
So I have worked, quotation marks, to get to a point where it's like, I want to see everything. Like, if I'm watching, what's your favorite movie?
That's a harder question.
What's your favorite action movie?
Oh, would Shaun of the Dead count?
I guess, but okay. So you have all those zombies that mm-hmm. fill up the screen.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want. You don't want to see black bars on the top and bottom.
Yep.
Like, I don't want to have to tilt, and I know that they make these. I know Samsung actually makes them too. Other companies do too, where the monitor will tilt and you can have the monitor or the television in portrait mode. But portrait mode to me is like, why do I want to look up and down? I just want to look left to right. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to have to crane my neck to see what's at the top of the stupid – I don't know. It's just so weird to me about how technology has changed to the point where now TikTok is the hottest social – and I just can't. I don't like – as a content consumer, I do not like watching portrait mode. Like I said, if I'm on my phone – which is Google Pixel 6 Pro, which is a, what is it, 6.7-inch display, and I go on Instagram and I, you know, look at a story, fine. That's my phone screen. That's okay. It's fine. It's whatever. On my television, I haven't set it up yet, but I have a 55-inch 4K UHD TV sitting in a box.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to – the whole point is wide. Wide, not tall. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, man. And I'm just kind of ranting about all this. But again, it's a thing that things are shifting in culture, whether it's pop culture, whether it's geek culture, whether it's nerd culture, whether it's tech cult. Like, you know, part of your oligopoly everywhere article is Hail the Weirdos. And this is my favorite part of the entire article, because you say in here, when everybody moves to the city, you get traffic apocalypse. When there's only five book publishers, you get endless franchise installments from a guy who is technically dead. I didn't even – I see that that's hyperlinked. I didn't even click on that to see which guy you're – oh my – wait, did he die?
Yeah.
Holy sh!
Yeah.
He Tom died Clancy, in 20
– Tom Clancy died nearly 10 years ago.
Oh my God.
And the books kept coming out regardless. It didn't matter. Tom Clancy is a force beyond – he's become more powerful than you could ever know.
He's become more powerful than Stephen King, apparently.
Yep.
And then you go on to say, so what do we do about it? We get weird. In an oligopoly, being different is a form of civil disobedience. You can't pass antitrust legislation all by yourself, and you don't have a million votes you can give to a third party. And then, you know, as you go down here about that's why you're worried, and you're absolutely right about this part. That's why I'm worried that we seem to be suffering from a deficit of deviance. In addition to the decline of cults and third parties, signs of counterculture are hard to find. Teens nowadays are less likely to smoke, drink, fight, do drugs, or have sex today than they were 30 years ago. You're not wrong about that, because look at how – look, I grew up in the 80s. I was in first grade in 1985. I was in sixth grade in 1992. Or, 1992. And all that through first through sixth grade, we had a DARE officer. We went through drug resistance education. We, you know, McGruff the crime dog was a thing. Mm-hmm. All this stuff was a thing. And kids today, they're more likely to fight over who gets to play on the iPad than they are to go out and have sex or smoke or do drugs. And I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure it does, but like you're saying in the article, like it's probably less likely to happen because all these kids are stuck on the screens.
Yeah. And, you know, to be clear, less teen pregnancy is good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But there's a downside, which is, you know, you don't when you turn that deviance dial down, you also lose some things. Mm-hmm. You know, you lose people doing interesting, new, creative things that we all benefit from, that expand our consciousness, that make us, that expose us to new ideas. And it's not clear to me exactly where that dial should be. And so I'm not even necessarily saying that we should turn it up across the board, but we should be aware of like the trade-offs that we lose when we turn it down. I think we should be wondering, like, okay, can we get some? Like, can we not have teens having kids, but can we get back some of the things that might have come with a culture where those sort of things happen?
Yeah.
And I think part of that comes from seeking out and tolerating new weird things.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem is there are no new weird things for kids.
Mm-hmm.
If there are, they aren't popular enough to, like, you look at anything in the 80s from 80, let's say 81 to 89. Maybe some of the things in certain things I'm about to mention aren't new, but the characters were.
Mm-hmm.
You look at He-Man, you look at Voltron. I mean, technically Voltron was whatever, but you look at He-Man, you look at Transformers, you look at Mask, you look at G.I. Joe, you look at any of those cartoons, any of those boys at Jim and the Holograms. I will forever say that Jim and the Holograms is not just for girls. It's also a boys action cartoon, even though it's, you know, rock chicks fighting each other over who's got the better concert and whatever else. And I know there are other issues there, but like all of that stuff was new and original. And we also had the Looney Tunes, we had Pink Panther, we had all these like legacy things that had been around since the 30s, 40s, 50s. Because to me, in the 80s as a kid, Looney Tunes was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Never saw, you know, same thing with Batman, Super Friends and Adventures of Batman and Robin. Like, even though, you know, Batman and Superman and all that had been around since 1938 and 39, in 1982, when we're seeing a show from the 70s on syndication, it's like, oh, this is brand new to me. Whereas nowadays, it's like, oh, this franchise now it has a new iteration.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Something that I'd be really interested in, so I haven't seen any data on this, but I'd be really interested to know, you know, those kind of like TV shows, other content, whatever, that are technically for kids, but like, you watch them and you're like, oh, geez, this is clearly like kids maybe shouldn't be watching this. For instance, I mean, I said my favorite cartoon is Invader Zim, a show that like wasn't like it's not safe for kids. Like it is, there's dark, weird things in it. There's an episode where like to fit in because he like collects a bunch of organs from all the kids in school. And by the end, he's like this big bloated mass of organs. And it made a big impression on me, and like it got me into reading Yonan Vasquez, the guy who created it. I got into reading his comic books, which like definitely aren't for kids. I mean, they're called Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, and like that got me into like writing cartoons as a kid. Anyway, what I would love to know is like, has the rate of kids content that like isn't really appropriate for kids changed over time? Because I mean, my very limited exposure to it right now, I have a niece who is 6 years old and some nephews who are younger than that. And so I've seen some of the stuff. And like, I mean, look, Invader Zim obviously wasn't made for kids who are six. But I'd love to know if anybody out there knows, like, are there still kids things that don't feel kid appropriate? Because I think that is like one of the on ramps into like weird and interesting things when you're a kid. Is like seeing stuff that is a little bit beyond what you know, most uptight parents think you should be watching at that point. And I mean, it's some of that can screw you up a little bit, but like I feel thankful that that I got into stuff that like wasn't exactly age appropriate at the time, because it turned me a little bit weird, and I remain appreciative for that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I was 9 years old in 1989 when that debuted. I saw the very first episode, and my stepmother heard something that either Homer said or Marge said or somebody. My stepmother at the time, she's no longer my stepmother, thank God. And she's like, "What are you watching? You can't watch that." And then later on, sometime in 1993, I was watching an episode of Batman the Animated Series. Oh my God, they said this, or oh my God, that, you know, Batman hit this person. That's too violent. You can't watch that. Like, seriously, this is The Simpsons and Batman. And The Simpsons, evolutionary. I mean, like, who today that grew up then is not still saying "Ay caramba," or like, I am not kidding. I have this playlist on Spotify. I've had it for years, actually, before I joined Spotify. But since 2006, when I first got iTunes. And yes, folks, iTunes is still a thing. It hasn't gone away. I've had this playlist called Faves, where I just put all of my favorite songs from every artist that I like in that playlist. And I just put that playlist on shuffle. It goes from, let's say, 12 Stones all the way to ZZ Top and anything in between. I've got Nickelback in there. I've got some Creed. I've got Theory of a Dead Man. I've got Black Stone Cherry, who are currently my all-time favorite rock band. I've got Hall & Oates. I've got Cyndi Lauper. I've got Annie Lennox. I've got, like I said, ZZ Top. I've got Rolling Stone. I've got just all of the songs and all of the music that I absolutely want to listen to at any time. And a couple of years ago, I wanted to buy back my childhood because I haven't had that CD in a long ass time. So I went on eBay and I found The Simpsons Sing the Blues. Anyone remembers the 90s, the early, early 90s, right before you were born, The Simpsons released their first album, The Simpsons Sing the Blues. Track one is Bart Simpson, Nancy Cartwright, and Michael Flippin' Jackson do the Bartman. It was a part of culture. Like there have been things like I mentioned earlier about, and you know, you're talking about the whole like cartoons not necessarily made for kids and things like that. I'm looking just specifically at the Transformers cartoons that have happened from 84 to current.
Mm-hmm.
And what I notice is that Hasbro, luckily, has throughout the years gone through and done various things, like in the aligned continuity of cartoons. So like Transformers Prime, Transformers Rescue Bots, Rescue Bots Academy, Robots in Disguise from 2015. All of these cartoons, Transformers Prime is pretty much the adults cartoon, like it's for us that grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Rescue Bots has more of like it's more aimed at kids,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. Same thing with Rescue, its sequel, Rescue Bots Academy. You know, so I think with specifically the Transformers brand, Hasbro has found a way to appease both,
mm-hmm.
you know, adult fans who grew up with the franchise and also bringing in the, like, my buddy Peacock Court Michael has two sons, you know, my buddy Steve, who is actually, this is his podcast and everything else. And, you know, he has two sons and I'm sure at one point or another, he will have them watch some of these. He may not have them watch Beast. I mean, his biggest thing is Beast Wars. I don't know if he'll ever have them watch Beast Wars, but he might let them watch this, that, or the other thing. But again, it's what I've noticed over the last 10 years or so is that, and I've known this for a while before then, whomever is making the cartoons, sometimes the point of it is they're making it like you look at all the old classic Looney Tunes cartoons. Nobody from Chuck Jones all the way to Bob Clampett, who was the strangest of all the Looney Tunes directors, they weren't making those Hollywood film shorts for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yet here we are in the 80s and 90s laughing our asses off at Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd chasing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, you know what I mean? So it's all about the perspective of the people who are making them. And yes, maybe specifically to Transformers, maybe Hasbro has a directive of, oh, we want you to go in this direction or we want this direction kind of thing. And you never know. I don't know. I think that the current He-Man cartoon that's on Netflix, not the Kevin Smith one, the other one, the CGI one,
mm-hmm.
I think that is perfect for kids today. Just like when I was a kid, the original He-Man from Filmation was perfect for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then you had, yes, you had this whole 30-minute or whatever, let's just say 30 minute with ads. You had this 30 minute cartoon series, but at the end you had a nice little message because that was the thing back then. They had the messages at the end of the cartoons,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas currently I don't think the current CGI He-Man has messages at the end, but it's animation styled for kids. It's got lessons in it that kids can learn. But it's not like a Blue's Clues or, you know, mm-hmm. it's for that 6 to 12 or 6 to 13 kind of age range. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on who's – I'm sorry. I need to shut up now.
Speaking of all these different versions of Transformers, for instance, like I think mm-hmm. one reason why we see oligopolization happening is like – companies that produce this stuff have finally realized all the hunger that there is for it. That, like, you know, I was a kid watching Invader Zim. I loved it. And then it got canceled after, I think, two seasons.
Yep.
And I wanted more so badly that I would, like, I was, like, trawling, like, the Invader Zim version, like, the wiki for Invader. I was, like, learning about, like, I think I found, like, pirated copies of, like, the audio for episodes that had been recorded but never animated. And I was exactly the kind of person who, if they had just pumped out more content, would have watched it. And I think they finally realized how much, like, people get invested in these things. And, like, of course, they'd always been making sequels, but finally realized that, like, oh, we could really cash in on this. And, like, now, of course, there's an Invader Zim movie on Netflix. You know, there's more content, like, they And so I think part of the reason why we see this is like, there's been this innovation where they're giving people exactly what they always wanted, which is, I fell in love with these characters and this fictional universe. I just want to spend more time there. And I think indulging that has like, is both good and bad. That like, yeah, I think I would have been really excited to spend more time in the Invader Zim universe. At the same time, like, I think I got what was most important out of the experience of like watching those cartoons. I don't think I would have benefited a lot from just steeping myself more in it versus going off and watching something else. So like, it's giving people what they want, but are you right to want it? I think is a fair question.
I think it's one of those things where, as long as we have good intentions, like, okay, there are plenty of, because my buddy, my other friend, Kevin, he goes by at Optimus Solo on Twitter, all one word. He and I, since 2011, have been covering every single episode of every single Masters of the Universe cartoon, from Filmation all the way up to current. The only thing so far we have not covered is the CGI show, the second season of the Revelation show, and then all of She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. Mm-hmm. But we've covered everything else. We've covered New Adventures. We've covered Filmation. So we've covered all of these. And there are bad episodes mm-hmm. and things like that. But just because I say something that I dislike on a podcast doesn't mean that I'm going to go to that creator or that voice actor. Or like, there's a huge difference in disliking something and expressing that versus going to the person saying, I really hated what you did with this. Yeah. Why did you – like, you don't do that. You don't – you can express something you dislike without attacking. And that's part of the thing with some of the social media stuff these days. Like, I don't know what it is about social media that gives everyone such entitlement to feel like, okay, we're going to talk about this here in a second, which I actually agree with you on this next one, but we're not going to get too far into this yet. But like, reading the news is the new smoking. Okay, sure, fine. Just because I read that article and I may have liked, agreed, or disliked and didn't agree with something doesn't mean I'm going to say, Adam, why did you – like, okay, going up into oligopoly everywhere. And if you feel as I do that something big has gone wrong, that there's a vague taste of poison in the water, all I can hear reading this is – there's poison in my boot, or whatever Woody says in Toy Story, or somebody, that's what it is. Somebody poisoned the water hole. Yeah. That's what it is. It's all I can hear. You know, just because I'm reading this sentence doesn't mean I'm going to go to you and say, Adam, what in the world made you write that sentence that, like, this whole, yeah, so, no, like, civilization, folks, like, we can all get along.
Okay? Yeah.
And it just – it drives me crazy. And it goes back – again, it goes back to, you know, like you were saying about the Invader Zim and about should I have a quote-unquote right to want more of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. You can always – like me, I have always wanted them to go back to the original 84 Generation 1 animated style and do something with it today. I know they're never going to do that, and that's okay. That's fine. I get it. I can still go back to those 98 episodes and watch them if I want, and still have. But do I secretly, in the back of my mind and in my heart, want more Generation 1 stories? Yes, absolutely. Just like I would love to have what we never got. After Beast Machines in the Beast era of Transformers, they were going to do Transtech, which was the next evolution of the Beast era. And we never got that. So I don't know what that would have been, but I know I probably would have liked it because I liked Beast Wars and I liked Beast Machines. So I think, yes, we do have a – I don't want to say it's a right to want more. It's more of a – do we have a feeling of like we want more? Yeah, sure. And that's okay as long as you approach it in a way where it doesn't – where you're not being toxicity in fandom is everywhere now.
Yeah, yeah.
Just look at, you know, you ask people about, heaven forbid anybody mention Marvel versus DC these days. Like, seriously, like, but it you know, and it's not just comics, it's everything. Like, you know, Funko Pop fans versus non-Funko Pop fans. Like, you know, I don't know. But to answer that, yes, I think it's okay to want more, but we also have to realize in the back of our minds with certain cartoons or television shows or even films, like, I know they've talked about this for years. I don't actually want it because I think, number one, he's too old, and number two, I don't know what story they would tell with it. They've talked about it since 1994 or 1995, Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Mm-hmm.
One and two were great. Three was okay. Didn't necessarily want to leave off on three. Mm-hmm. But my feeling is, why do we need sequels to films that are don't get me wrong. I love Tron Legacy. Absolutely love Tron Legacy. But it took Tron Legacy, because I was 2 years old when Tron came out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you. It's kind of like me saying to you, oh, you were only 3 years old or 4 years old when Spider-Man the Animated Series came out in 1994 or when X-Men came out in 1992. You're only a year old. Like, so for me, it took me up until 2011. It took a sequel for me to go back and watch the first film. And I watched the first Tron, and I absolutely dug it. I watched Legacy. I absolutely dug it. I wanted more.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, that has never happened. And we are now at 11 years since Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
There should be a certain time limit before you, because the biggest example I can give you, and I don't know how they did this, but from 1972 up until 1985, Hall and Oates, greatest 80s duo of all time, put out an album every single year from 72 to 85. Because by 85, they kind of split up and Daryl did his own thing in 86 and John went off and did whatever. But for those almost 12, 13 years, they put out an album every year.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the 80s and we have He-Man, Transformers, Thundercats, Silverhawks, Turtles. 88, 89 was like the beginning of the Disney Afternoon. We have all these things. Like, I moved from things. Yes, did I want more Transformers? Absolutely. But I moved from Transformers to Mask, or from Mask to Thundercats, and the biggest jump was from Transformers to Turtles, because by 87 it was the TMNT craze,
mm-hmm,
and all that. So, like, God, I forgot where I was going with this. I need to edit this out.
I don't think anybody's wrong to want more, and certainly people have a right to have more. But I think we also all have I think there's a higher calling that we have as consumers to think a little bit about the things that we consume. And so you can spend your life getting more of the thing that you already like. And that's fine. And I think everybody should have some mix of that, mixed in with, some desire to expand your horizons and see new things. And I think the difference today versus in the past is you can, if you want to, just keep consuming the things that you already know. They'll give you, another spinoff. They'll give you another season. You were sad that Breaking Bad ended. How about a full length feature film on Netflix? That sucks, but you can watch it. It has all the characters. This is what you wanted, right?
Well, it didn't necessarily suck.
It didn't have for me, most of that movie was about, can Jesse Pinkman, get enough money? And I was just like, and, he gets enough money and then he loses it. And I'm like, this is missing the magic of the show. I just felt cheapened by the whole thing. You were right. I did just want to spend more time in the Breaking Bad universe. I just like these characters. But at some point, you what makes them good is that they are limited. You have to let it go. It's like, you know, the feeling you get at the end of summer camp. It's like, oh, I don't want this to be over. And if, you know, Netflix shows up and it's like, it doesn't have to be over. You can be at summer camp for the rest of your life. you shouldn't actually take the deal. Like, you do have to leave summer camp eventually, and then you can go back next summer. But I think
that was the greatest thing before. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go
that's
ahead.
The greatest thing before streaming. Before streaming, you either had to use your VCR with your VHS tape and record your cartoons or your shows or whatever if you wanted to save them. If you know, they talk about appointment television nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't no bigger appointment television than Seinfeld and insert show here and whatever else.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to watch that, you had to either be there or have it recorded. Whereas now it's like, you know, like I was saying earlier, like from 80 to, you know, each year something happened that moved me through whatever. Same thing with summer camp. Same thing with the television season. Usually in the fall we get new seasons of whatever shows, or we get new shows along with the returning shows. By Christmas they're on break. They come back in January. By May they're going off for the summer, and then you move into summer reruns. Same thing with school. Like, mm-hmm. School usually starts, most places usually start anywhere from August to the end of September, depending on the school and the state and whatever. You have Halloween, you have Thanksgiving, you have Christmas. In Massachusetts, it was awesome, mm-hmm. because we had, obviously Halloween's usually just one night, so it's not really a, like, oh, you have this off. Usually Halloween at school would be like, oh, bring in your candy. Same thing with Valentine's Day. It's like, bring in your hearts for all the sweethearts and blah, blah, blah. But you would have Thanksgiving, which is usually a super long weekend for kids. And then you'd have like 2 weeks for Christmas. In Massachusetts, we had February vacation. Mm-hmm. Where we had either 1 week or 2 weeks in February where we were off. And then, you know, you'd go through March, and by April is usually – so we actually got a second winter break in February in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And then we got spring break in late March or April or whenever spring break is supposed to be. And then by the end of May, middle of June, whenever that is, again, depending on the state you live in, depending on the area, whatever, depending on the school, mm-hmm. by – I would say no later than June 20th, everybody was out until the next – so you have this transition of going to school, being off from school, and then you hit summer where let's say you've graduated sixth grade and you're going to the next grade or whatever. And you have a whole summer to go back to that summer camp and have those adventures. So you have this circle of life,
yeah,
pun intended, of – having a routine, having a thing that happens to you throughout the entire year. And it worked.
Yeah.
And now with entertainment being so accessible, like, I remember when we first started, not Altered Geek, but we started Geekcast Radio and some other shows that we've done in the past. I used to have a giant, like, three shelves of DVDs between television series and films and cartoons and, you know, complete series of sets and everything else. Some days I would just look at that wall and be like, I don't know what I want to watch. Mm-hmm. I have all this stuff, but I don't know what I actually want to watch. And now we have all of that at our fingertips.
Yeah.
It's like so much choice that we don't know what to do with that choice.
Yeah. And I think the promise of modern technology in a lot of ways is like, oh, you don't have to obey the laws of the universe anymore. Summer camp never has to end for you. Like, you like these characters that end the show, you never have to say goodbye to them. And same thing with social media. Like, oh, you like these friends, you never have to say goodbye ever again. They're always your friends on Facebook. You never have to be bored again. You can always take out your phone and look at it. You never have to be alone again. Like, you could always take out your phone and, like, text somebody. And, like, all of these things, I think, are really false promises. Like, you don't actually get the thing that you really want. You get, like, this weird shadow version of it. You like The Sopranos? You can have The Many Saints of Newark. Like, that's what you wanted, right? And it's like, no, It's like, oh, you had fun at summer camp. Don't you want to like message people on Facebook afterward? That's the same thing, right? And it's like, it's not. It's like, you can't actually get more of the things that you truly wanted. You can get worse versions of those things. And sometimes the worst version is better than nothing at all. And sometimes it's not.
Yeah, sometimes it's not. So I think we're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some ads and some other stuff, and we're going to come back and talk about one quick final thing before we close it out.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe podcast from the universe and beyond.
Hurry, Skeletor, hurry! I'm hurrying!
The Powers of Grayskull series has covered every episode of all of the Masters of the Universe cartoons except for two. Join Optimus Solo and TFG and Mike as they tell tales of Eternia, discover the myths of Etheria, become masters in space, evolve into the Masters of Grayskull, and finally reveal the revelation of Masters of the Universe. We'll also be finding out the origins of how guests got into or out of watching the Masters of the Universe cartoons, and so much more. You can find the podcast at geekcastradio.com and any podcatching client you choose to use. By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, we all have the power.
He-Man! Always He-Man!
12 years in the making. After 6 top 100 countdowns, the GeekCast Radio Network, along with 33 participants, are launching our top 100 Transformers characters countdown. August 8th, 2021. 35 years after Transformers the movie was released. Don't be the only con left out of this one, folks. Because, really, whether you're a Predacon or a Decepticon, you want to be at the top. Right, Megatron?
Yes.
Tune in to GeekCast Radio Network's Top 100 Transformers Characters Countdown from August 8th through September 17th, 2021. 6 parts, 6 Constructicons. Learn who will fall and where they will fall, because one always falls. Transform and transcend here with us on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Why nobody love Waspinator?
Well, I am shocked and dismayed.
Well, now you can't be both. You be shocked, I'll be dismayed.
All right, folks, we are back here on Altered Geek, and I hope people have enjoyed this, because I've enjoyed it. This has been a fun conversation with you, Adam. This has been awesome.
It's been great. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're not done yet, folks, because the third thing we are tackling tonight is another article Adam wrote back in June of this year. Reading the news is the new smoking. I quit. I feel great. You can too.
Yeah.
Before I even read this, and the whole reason why we're even talking about this is because I don't feel like, as a podcaster, that myself or Steve or anybody that records with us, we're not reporting the news. Mm-hmm. We are getting sources from insert website here for this topic here, and we are reacting to the news. We are giving our, like, what got announced at San Diego Comic-Con this year, whatever that is, insert that here. We then give our reaction to that news, whether we like it or whether we dislike it. What's going on with HBO Max and Warner Brothers and Discovery and Zaslav and Batgirl and, you know, okay, fine, we can read an article briefly and tell you what the information is, and then we basically just give you our thoughts on what that is. Mm-hmm. So we're not actually we're not sitting behind a news desk looking at a prompter. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, we're not news reporters. We're news reactors. So when I read this, reading the news is the new smoking. And I have never smoked a cigarette a day in my life. My mom smoked my whole life. And I just never, like I said earlier, I was a DARE kid. I was a drug abuse resistance education mm-hmm. kid. And I never have, like, I've drank alcohol in the past, but I don't drink. I don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the thing that's probably going to kill me is too much Diet Coke and ice cream or mm-hmm. whatever. You know what I mean? Like I, you know, so, but you're absolutely right, because I cannot stand the news.
Mm-hmm.
Any news, I don't care what it is. Like, I will sit here and I wish Google, as smart as Google is, I wish they were a little smarter. I haven't even clicked on this, but from the direct 13 hours ago, this is the top headline on my Google feed. Daredevil's Rosario Dawson breaks silence on Disney Plus reboot. Okay, uh-huh. Isn't it just a new season of the show that transferred from Netflix? It's not technically, and that's my other problem. Like, this is a reboot. That's a reboot. No, it's a continuation. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Or, like, yeah, but like these headlines, it's like Thor: Love and Thunder is an 80s kids movie, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Love and Thunder. I don't know. But just like, you know, the news is everywhere with social media, with all of this stuff. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you start off part of this and say during the 2016 administration, you would devour news of that president's latest impropriety and mm-hmm. imagine yourself throttling one of his supporters. Why did you do this? You know, I would shout squeezing the life out of them. And then you started to feel like maybe this was a bad thing.
Yeah.
and that's the thing. Like, we are, again, like we've said in the last hour or so, we are so inundated on social media with everything. And like, look, I want to be loyal to certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, I, you know, And when I say that, it's like I lived in this city, so I want to follow this city's news channel.
Mm-hmm.
Like TV, like on specifically on Facebook, I follow WCVB Channel 5 from Boston. I haven't lived in Massachusetts full time since 2001. Like, haven't lived there, but mm-hmm. yet I still follow them because certain stories that they do pertain to the city and the state that I grew up in, that yeah. I was born and bred, you know, so I want to follow them. Or I want to follow this city that I lived in for 25 years, Louisville, Kentucky. And you know what? As I'm looking through my Facebook feed, the Louisville station and the Boston station sometimes have the exact same story.
Yeah, yeah.
Why am I like, you know, like all of this, like I recently moved from Washington State here to Indiana. I am now following one local Indiana news channel on Facebook. I have since removed all of my likes on most of all of the media from Washington mm-hmm. because whatever happens in Washington doesn't affect me right now in the state that I'm living in because I'm not living in that state. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's what I mean about loyalty. Like, I felt like I needed to stay connected to this. But then again, if they're just going to all report some of Like, it's more than national stories. Like, yeah. Every news station in every city, even the smallest city, even the smallest television station or newspaper or insert whatever media you want here, is going to have the same national news story.
Yeah.
They may write it up differently because you have different people at different stations, but the news essentially is all the same.
Yeah, and I do think that that it is that national news that I think is the most damaging, that a lot of those news stories are just like, this bad thing might happen, or this political figure said this outrageous thing. And what I found in my own experience was just like, I experienced bloodlust reading those stories, and it didn't actually change anything about my behavior. If anything, it distracted me from the good that I think I can do in my life and in my own communities. And it just seems like you should feel the emotion of bloodlust very sparingly. You shouldn't do it every day, repeatedly, over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I stopped. And I think some of the local news I think is less damaging, in part because it is about things that might impact your behavior more closely. And people that you could conceivably interact with. So I think the more local, probably the less bad it is to read. And I think, I mean, look, if it's related to something that you're interested in, like if you want to know what's coming out on Netflix or what's coming out on Steam or whatever, I think it also makes sense to follow that. And that really feels like something different to me than this constant running stream of like, here are the big bad things that have happened everywhere in the world. And here are all the bad things that might happen. And here are all like the bad people, like let's check in with them again to see like what horrible things they're doing. That I think leads to a biased view of the world. I think people come to see the world as filled with bad people. And in fact, this is some of the work I did for my dissertation was about how people think that people are less moral than they used to be, less kind and less honest and nice and good. And the model that we've built that we think explains part of why this happens is because people are always getting fed information on how bad the world is. Plus there's this quirk of human memory where the badness of bad memories fades faster than the goodness of good memories. And if you put those things together, you get people who always think the world is bad, but they mistakenly remember it as being better than it was. And I think the news is a critical part of producing that illusion.
Yeah.
So that's part of why I stopped. And I feel pretty good. And I know it makes some people upset because I think you have a moral obligation to follow these things. And I think you really have a moral obligation to try to be a good person and like do the good that you can do. And I think it is an illusion to think that most of the that even a tiny bit of the good that you do is reading about bad things happening in the world and feeling upset about them and then switching the tab and watching some Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know. I have all the respect in the world for police officers, firefighters, EMS people, doctors, nurses, everything else. But just because a mass shooting happens or this happens or that happens again, and I don't mean to sound like I'm an asshole when I say this, does that affect me?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's sad as hell. It's whatever. But what can I do to affect change so that doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
I can't do anything because there is nothing I can do.
And especially like, when you...
There is...
Yeah, sorry. Well, just like when you think of how many people there are in the world, billions of people, mm-hmm. that means that there's always going to be someone somewhere doing some crazy thing. And like that's not just news. That's just like... a thing that's going to happen with that many people being alive every day.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, like the news story about that doesn't really mean anything. Like to say that someone got struck by lightning today is like, it's newsworthy. If there's only 10 people in the world, if there's 8 billion people in the world, somebody's going to get struck by lightning today.
Yeah.
Like that's going to happen. And so really what you want to know is you want to have someone step back and go like, okay, well, are there more lightning strikes on people like per capita than there used to be? Or and you're just not going to get it from these single stories about these bad things happening, even though they are bad. And we wish they didn't happen. If I could vote against them happening, I definitely would.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, nobody's asking me.
Yeah. And the thing is as I'm reading through your article, after I finished it, my questions that I wrote down was, so when we've kind of already talked about this, you've already just explained it all. So no more news for you, huh? And then the follow-up to that was, which is what I'm going to say here, news hurts my head half the time. Do you remember the news story that broke your brain? The one that made you go, that's it? I'm done. I'm not following it. Yes, I pay attention. Look, we all have to pay attention to some news. We all have to, you know how, I don't know if you see this stuff on Facebook. I see it all the time. Especially in the last like month and a half or so. What's the first news story you remember as a kid? For me, the biggest news story I remember as a kid is two things. Even though I was born, but I remember it happening because my mom would talk about Lenin dying, uh-huh. Lenin getting shot, or however the hell John Lennon ended up dead, and the Challenger explosion. The Challenger explosion is the first major news story I remember as a kid.
Yeah.
So for the... When you were writing this article, when you say you're done with it, do you remember if there was a specific news story that just broke your brain?
Yeah, it was the summer of 2020.
Enough said.
I need to focus on the things that I think are important and that I think I can actually affect. And I think I say this in the post as well, but like I teach students, and like when those students are in that classroom with me, like I have a pretty big impact on their world. And if I do my job well, like their lives are noticeably better. But if I'm distracted and I'm like, oh man, there's all these issues in the world, I got to work on them. Like it's a zero sum game in terms of my time and attention. Like that is time and attention that I'm not putting toward the place where I can make the biggest impact. And so that's, that was kind of the moment for me, even though it wasn't like, oh, this news story is so dumb.
Yeah.
But it really felt like this is an opportunity to think about like, what is the point of my efforts? What is the positive change that I want to make in the world? And like, let me double it down on that rather than being pulled in every direction with every new bad thing that happens.
Yeah.
So that's what did it for me.
Yeah. And the sad thing is that it seems like it's a 95% to 5% ratio of 95% bad news, 5% good news.
Yeah.
Like you don't ever hear of, like very rarely do you hear about, which Jim Carrey movie was it where he was the reporter? Oh God, I don't remember. Anyway, but whatever. But like seriously, like you know, you take any whatever, and you know, you have news reporters that like cover, like I was talking about earlier about interviewing Big Ed from Big Ed's Barbecue in Waukegan, Illinois. That was a good positive thing I wanted to do because I wanted to bring light to what he was doing by giving this Thanksgiving dinner at his restaurant, and also on top of dealing with people coming into the restaurant, he was having people deliver dinners to people's homes who couldn't get to I know there are a lot of charitable organizations out there that do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you don't hear about it every single, like,
yeah.
It just sucks that we are in a world now, and we've been in this world for a while, where the bad outweighs the good, and I don't like it.
Yeah. And I think like it isn't, I think there's like so much good in the world, and like, what is a fair way of like, how can you survey the world in a fair way and like add up all the good and the bad and see like, does it average out to good? I just don't think there is a way of doing that, but certainly a wrong way of doing that is to rely on the news to do it for you, because like their job isn't to give you like a random sample of all things happening in the world. They're going to give you the things that they think you're going to click on. And most of those things are going to be bad things. But if you look around your corner of the world, like the people that you know, the things that you do every day, like, mm-hmm. does it seem like mostly good? For me, that answer is like resoundingly yes. And in some of my studies, I find that like people don't think the people that they know have gotten worse. It's like it's all those people out there who have gotten worse. But of course, everybody that you say is out there for you is in here for someone else.
Yeah.
And so can it really be the case that like, oh, everybody's little circle is getting better, but the whole circle is getting worse? Like, I think that has to be an illusion.
Yeah.
And I think it's an illusion in part maintained by having these constant stories about people doing bad things to one another.
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, now that we are still living in the time of COVID, because I don't think we're out of it yet, personally. That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Since I've moved to this apartment, so let's say from the end of May of this year to right now in, what the hell month is this? August of 2022. In that time, throughout the summer, and luckily they've recovered from it, but obviously they've suffered from it, I have known personally 8 to 10 people that all had COVID almost at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Of some of my best, like my buddy Ryan up in Canada, he and his wife got it. They've recovered, thankfully. Another friend got it, another friend, but like literally as I'm doing this move across the country from Washington here to Indiana to my new apartment and everything else, I'm hearing all this news from my friends and I'm like, oh my God, I wish there was something I could do. What can mm-hmm. I do? And I really can't do anything because I'm not a doctor mm-hmm. and there is no, I mean, technically there is no proven, I mean, yes, there's the vaccine and all that, but even people that are vaccinated have caught it again. And it's like, holy crap. What in the Sam? It's like, that's why I said earlier, a second ago, about 95% to 5% between bad and good. And it just sucks because you want to, like, for me as a podcaster, when I do review shows, I want to focus on what I enjoy. I want to tell people why I like this. I'm going to use this example, and I know probably even though we're an hour and 32 minutes into this, I'm sure people are going to tune out when I say this. 2017 was the last new – okay, so in 2017, Nickelback released Feed the Machine, their latest album. Okay, I've listened to it. I've been a Nickelback fan since 2001 or – well, yeah, do that. Yeah, 98, yeah, somewhere around. Anyway. The State came out, which is 98. Anyway, point is that I've been a Nickelback fan for the longest time and mm-hmm. I always get attached to it. So I'll come on and I'll say, this is why I like this, this, and this. Oh, and maybe I didn't like this part or that. And this goes to anything, not just Nickelback, but it's just anything. But there are certain topics and there are certain things where it's like, if I sit here and post any of the old Nickelback content on social media and I say, hey, go back if you want to and hear why I like this from them, I'll get at least 7 people in the comments. Nickelback's the worst. They suck. Like, you know, and that's not just Facebook. It's Twitter. It's everywhere else. But like, you know, we're talking about the news and how there is more bad news than good news. Some of these people, especially with some of these hard-hitting, like any educational issue, anything in the education department, and you said you teach students and things mm-hmm. like that, so you may or may not know about this, but like, say a school makes a decision that people don't like, they will sit, instead of going to the school and complain, and which is what we would have done, which is what my mom would have done when I was a kid in the 80s, instead of going to, and I know we didn't have social media back then, but instead of going to the school and complaining, they'll sit there and type on Facebook like I'm not a parent, but say I was, and I say, oh, well, my kid needs this, and I don't like what the school's doing here. Somebody will come back at me saying, oh, you don't like this? You don't like that? Well, you're a bad person because you don't like their decision to do that. And I'm like, oh, my God. And this will devolve into a back and forth on a news post on whatever news insert news channel here on like a 13 comment thread on Facebook versus actually going to the school and saying, hey, I don't like this. What can we do about it? It's like, oh my God. It's like people don't have anything better to do than to just argue on social media. I try my best not to do that. I end up doing it sometimes, but I really try to avoid it.
Yeah. Some of my other work is actually on things like this. And we find that people think that they're going to be able to convince other people to change their minds in arguments like this. And that, like, of course they're wrong. Because, you know, ask people, has your mind ever changed by engaging in one of these arguments? And people will be like, well, you know, maybe they can come up with like one time once. So, okay, it's not impossible, but it certainly doesn't happen nearly as much as people try to make it happen. And I think try to make it happen with the expectation that they're going to be successful. And so I think much like tuning out of the news in order to focus on the things that I think I can affect, so too with arguing with people about things. Like, I think you got to pick your battles very specifically.
Oh, absolutely, you do. And there's, I think I reshared it recently. Somebody somewhere, I don't know. I've had this for a while on my Facebook feed, but I saw a Facebook post that I didn't like or I didn't agree with, or I just kept scrolling. You can too.
Like, yeah, you can.
You don't always have to stop and,
you know. Yeah, it's a superpower.
Yeah. You'd think. If only.
Yeah.
All right. So no more news cigarettes for us, folks. This has been a blast. It has been awesome talking with you. I'm sure half the things that are in this podcast people are not going to agree with, but that's okay.
That's all right.
But this has been fun. Yeah, this has been fun. This has been great. You'll have to – I'll have to keep updated on your site to see what else you're going to be doing because seriously, like some – like. That oligopolization, like you're not wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. thanks for having me. And it's been great to talk to you. And you can always always find me online. My blog is Experimental History. I publish there every other week. So if you like this stuff or if you hate this stuff and want to send it to an enemy, there will be a new one every Tuesday, including tomorrow. Although by the time this goes out, tomorrow will be in the past. So it'll already be there. And that's great news. That's news we can all get behind.
There you go. That's a cigarette we can smoke all the way down to the nub. Oh, God. All right, folks. Once again, we are going to take a quick break. Come back to close the show after this.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk.
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Car.
Download this show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Discover a world of vintage and modern toys that's more than meets the eye with the Triple Takeover Toycast.
Hosted by toy writers and photographers Toybox Soapbox, 6-0 and TF Square One, this informal and chilled out series of discussions cover everything from vintage Transformers to Mask, Diaclone, Microman and more, be it nostalgic or current.
Whether you're a seasoned collector or a casual robot enthusiast, all are welcome.
Triple Takeover Toycast.
Oh, hey, I got something!
Since 2009, we have been the premier cartoon podcast here at the Geekcast Radio Network. We are Tooncast, from taking you beyond the cartoons we grew up with to seasonal saucy toon talk, and now we get the origins of toonsters everywhere as we ask guests 30 questions about their cartoon watching experiences, plus so much more. Tooncast is back. Join me, TFG and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we give you all the toon talk you will ever need, only on the GCRN. And wherever you consume your podcasts, we are beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination. We are all toons all the time here on Tooncast.
Yeah.
ToyCast is back. We are talking toys once more here on the GeekCast Radio Network's Toy and Action Figure Podcast. From breaking into the display case to our toy topic talk and the brand new Origins in Toy Collections, where we get guests to tell us their toy story of how they got into toy collecting. ToyCast is the only toy podcast you will ever need. Find us on GeekCastRadio.com and any podcatching client you choose to use. Now go forth, transform and transcend your toy collecting today while listening to ToyCast.
Boil 'em, mash 'em, stick 'em in a stew.
I love when a plan comes together.
All right, folks, that's this episode of Altered Geek. I have been TFG and Mike, and you can find me on all the socials at TFG and Mike. I believe Twitter is at TFG and Mike. Facebook is at TFG2Mike. Instagram is TFG and Mike Presents. What are your socials, Adam?
I'm on Twitter. I am A_M_Mastriani. Good luck finding me. otherwise, I don't do the Instagram, LinkedIn, Friendster, all that stuff. But you can find me on Substack, experimentalhistory.substack.com. I'm always there, and you can find the rest of me through that.
Very cool, very cool. His Twitter and his experimental history links will be in the show notes, folks. So be sure to visit geekcastradio.com and look in this post to be able to contact or get in touch with Adam or read some of his amazing, amazing articles. Because, wow, I couldn't have written that stuff. Very well done, sir.
I appreciate it. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a blast. This has been fun. This kind of conversation that we've had in this podcast is the kind of conversations I've wanted to have for a while. And I said to you off air, this is kind of why I have the whole GCRN Origins, where I have, like, for toy collecting, I have 42 questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, 42 is the answer to everything, isn't it? And number two, yeah, it's like I wanted to have as in-depth and as specific questions as possible all about toy collecting from childhood to adulthood and in between kind of thing. So absolutely love that. I'd like to thank Adam for taking the time to chat with me here in this special Altered Geek interview only on the GeekCast Radio Network. Remember, folks, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, and we'll catch you next time.